song to the mother, sing a song to the earth, sing a song of hope and joy, a song of rebirth. Growing hope swirls around us in spite of darkened skies, held fast on our mother's lap. We know her love will be revived. Let all who hear rejoice again. We rise up to the call, confronting evil with the truth. We open a door for hope swirls around us in spite of darkened skies, held fast on our mother's lap. We know her love will be revived. Let all who hear rejoice again. We rise up to the call, confronting evil with the truth. We open a door for all. Sing a song to the mother. Sing a song to
Hi, this is Janie Reisner, and welcome once again to Women's Voices. I thank you so much for being here. I want to read you a page from Patriarchy. My eldest child and daughter, Cynthia, recently celebrated her 53rd birthday, and I just turned 74. I was 21 years old when she was born, and I gave birth to my third and last child when I was 24. Suddenly, after a childhood spent in nature, living happily with my parents on our farm, where there was no hint of violence or uproar or manipulation in our family life, here I was with three little children, living with a man whose emotional development was twisted and deeply self-absorbed. His only concern was how he felt. His needs were the ones that counted. He needed children not to cry or want things. He needed it not to rain if he planned to play golf. And if these things did happen, he blamed the children. He blamed the rain. He would cook breakfast on Sunday mornings, and it ended up being a nightmare, always, with our three little children crying and running to their rooms, and his having a fit about something that didn't please him. As I stood by watching helplessly, without power or words, wondering how I would ever get out of this madness. This page out of my early married life demonstrates what it is like for a mother living in a patriarchal world. Why didn't I speak up? Why didn't I say, "Stop acting like that"? Because I was afraid. And I had no models around me for speaking up. It took me 12 often dreadful years for me with my children to get out of that marriage to my doctor husband, and then only possible with the help of an extraordinarily intuitive psychiatrist who skillfully protected me and guided me out the door to freedom. I realize this little story is mild in terms of abusive behavior in comparison to many mothers' stories. I'm trying to bring into consciousness what that time was like. Why did it happen? Why did he dare behave like that? And I didn't call him on it. Because he had been given the power by the patriarchal order, and I had not. I was the underling. I was not his equal. How strange. And of course, this continues today in horrific violence against women and children all around the world. We all know that as a child, your security is based in your mother. You hide behind your mother's skirts. You run to your mother when something scares you. You love to be near your mother, and you instinctively trust her to protect you. In the animal kingdom, the maternal instinct of the mother is known and respected. No one gets between the mother bear and her cub. That's how it's supposed to be. Mothers protect their own children. However, since that can't happen in these patriarchal parts, our children are abused right before our eyes, and we do nothing, like I did nothing when my husband was verbally abusive and aggressive in his behavior with my children. The word relationship didn't exist back then in Davenport, Iowa. The word abuse didn't exist either, and certainly one had never heard those words, sexual abuse. None of that. I have no idea what he might have done if I had said, "Enough. When are you going to grow up?" He probably would have knocked me over. But it is the truth. He was allowed to not clean up his childish behavior by the patriarchal culture, for it condones his behavior as a man. I couldn't call him on it and say, "You aren't fit to be a father." Scholar Rhianne Eisler is not alone in pointing out what patriarchal structure has done to life on Earth for the past 5,000 years. She is one among many, mostly but not all, women scholars who describe our much longer, nonviolent history before patriarchy, the one written out of our awareness by the folks in charge. We humans have an extraordinary past, generally peaceful, rich with creativity, and deeply connected to the earth and nature and her seasons, with deep maternal values, which have been ignored and written out of most everything, just as if it didn't exist. Rhianne Eisler's life work has been about researching our prehistory, unraveling how we moved from a peaceful and egalitarian world into a violent and warring culture. And she picks apart the threads of violence and abuse against women and children, which begins in the home, through school, and is reinforced in most every aspect of our children's lives, particularly little boys, forcing them to obey the abuser, which creates great internal rage, and to guard against and repress their own girl-like and caring feelings, a huge wounding, and devalue their mothers and all women, and from that devalue the other, whether by skin color, race, economic standing, and the earth itself. It is a power over model that rules our day. It has been my intention from the beginning for my part of Women's Voices to bring women to the airwaves who are devoting their lives to pointing out our prehistory, to pointing out the great loss of life from patriarchal rule, speaking to our need to awaken to the sacred feminine. My guest today, Mara Lynn Keller, is one of those women. Before I introduce Mara, I share this prayer with you. May we move to a higher, deeper state of consciousness, one that is grounded in our awakening awareness that once upon a time we lived in harmony on Mother Earth, filled with creativity, blossoming with the gift of life from our mother. May we become aware that not only do we dare to reclaim our heritage, it is the only thing for each of us to do. Dr. Mara Lynn Keller received her degree in philosophy from Yale University and is a professor of philosophy and religion and director of the Women's Spirituality MA and PhD programs in philosophy and religion at the California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco. A holistic philosopher and theologian, she is a scholar and ritualist of the Eleusinian mysteries of Demeter and Persephone. She has published articles on the goddesses of Greece and Crete, and most recently on violence against women and children in religious scriptures and in the home. In keeping with her goal of integrating body, mind, and spirit, she is also a Rosen Method bodyworker practitioner and movements teacher. Previously, she taught philosophy and women's studies at San Francisco State University for 19 years, where she also co-founded and coordinated the Global Peace Studies Program. Welcome, Mara.
Hi, Janie. Thank you for all your inspiring words and your beautiful music.
You're most welcome.
And hello to all your listeners up there in Northern California who are so lucky and blessed to live on the land.
Indeed. You had a taste of that, didn't you, once upon a time?
I did. I used to come up there weekends with my partner up near Philo, back into the woods where we had a place, and just loved it. It's just so wonderful and magical up there.
It really is. I'm just thrilled to have you on the show with us. One of the first questions I generally ask my guests, given that this is Women's Voices, I'm wondering what part your own mother played in your childhood, influencing you to become the woman that you are today.
Well, I dearly loved my mother, Mary. She was a very wonderful mother, and you know, she was devoted to us. She had lost her own mother at the time of childbirth, and I think there was nothing else more important to her than being a mother and being a good mother. And she was. She loved us dearly, and I always felt supported and uplifted and led by that love into the larger world. Some of the things she taught us, what she loved she was her grandmother had been raised by nuns and had married a Presbyterian minister, and she grew up in a Christian home with Christian ethics, and she taught that to me. We loved going to church together and sharing the sacred calendar of the year, and then preparing, making ritual preparations for communion on Sundays when I was old enough to join the altar guild. So she really gave me a religious upbringing, a spiritual upbringing, which I've carried into my adult life, now into the goddess traditions and women's spirituality. One of the great gifts she gave me was appreciating and respecting all the religious traditions of the world, and the belief that God is love, and God loves all the children of the world, and that there are many paths to come to the great divine. I prefer the word, or to come to God, I prefer the word the great mystery, because I think the divine is ultimately unnameable and beyond human characterizations, but I feel that we have many different paths, and the one that feels most comfortable to me is goddess spirituality.
Yes. Well, how did that come about? Since you were in the Episcopal Church, there probably wasn't much reference to the mother.
No. My mother's name was Mary Virginia, and we did have some
That's so wonderful.
Virgin Mary
yes.
images at home. I was told that, you know, Catholics could venerate but not worship Mary, and so she wasn't a focus of worship, but of love and respect, I would say, in our home. And Christmas was always a very important time. So the Holy Mother and the Holy Son were you know, had a large spiritual presence in our religious life. Let's see, after a while, coming up in the 60s and the student movement and the anti-war movement and the women's movement, I gradually grew tired of the all the male-centered language that was always in the church then. It was before the inclusive language movement in the church, and it just felt too male-centered. And that started to rub me the wrong way, and I just had to leave the church because of that. There was another reason. The belief that it was a kind of a narrow belief, I thought, that only Christians could approach God or be saved, and I just felt that was way too narrow a religion. I don't think Christians have to believe that anymore, but that was the way I thought you had to think, mm-hmm. and so I just couldn't live with that anymore. I couldn't believe in that anymore.
Do you know, I think that fundamentalists do still believe that.
Well, I do think I can't believe in a God who would be so unmerciful as to condemn the vast majority of people in the world throughout time to hell. So I just can't go along with that kind of a view.
Well, yes. Don't you think that kind of religion is kind of imposed upon? I mean, we're all creatures. We've all been created, and I believe we're all divine. So, I mean, religion is sometimes just a man's creation.
Well, I think it has been used to manipulate people into the interests of the ruling classes, and that has been unfortunate. It keeps people pacified and servile, and women and men both in some cases, and then all the money and wealth and power flows up to the religious authorities who work in hand in hand with the political authorities. So I think that's been a dyad that has been very problematic all the way around the world for millennia now.
Yes, absolutely. You are a ritualist of Demeter and Persephone. What does that mean?
I became fascinated by the thought of a religion that centered on the mother and daughter, and I thought this was an important complement or supplement or something that had been missing for women, for females, for women and girls, and I was very interested in the religion of the mother and daughter. So I studied the Eleusinian Mysteries, and there are a number of rituals held in their honor throughout the agricultural year in ancient Greece, but the major rites were the Lesser Mysteries celebrating sexuality and the arrival of spring, and then in the fall, the Greater Mysteries, which were about death and rebirth. It was a harvest festival that brought in the crops and then prayed for the renewal of the crops and all life in the next year to come. And that was a 9-day ritual that they had every fall. Mm-hmm. Everybody turned out. I mean, maybe 30,000 people. The whole community was there.
Where was this?
At Athens and Eleusis. But people came from all over the world.
And the time period?
And beyond. Well, you know, it's from about 1450 before the Christian era until about 450 of the Christian era. So almost 2,000 years.
And isn't it amazing that we never learn about any of this?
Very few people know about the Eleusinian Mysteries of Demeter and Persephone, and it's a shame that it was lost. Some of it was continued on into the early Christian church and into the stories of Mary, but mostly it was lost.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. You were telling me exactly how it went, and I'm interested in hearing that, and I'm sure everyone is. In this
you want all 9 days?
Well, probably not.
Well, you know, there's a great gathering, and I love, there's the invitation on the first day and the dedication to the rites of initiation. The second day, you go to the sea to bathe in the womb waters of Mother Earth. I love that. It's tricky here in Northern California because the Pacific is so cold, but in the Aegean, it's warm, and you can float and imagine yourself in the womb waters of Mother Earth being washed clear of the past and all tension and the heavy karma of the past, and then you're ready to approach the mother for asking for rebirth. And so day by day, there's a way of going deeper and deeper. If you get immersed for 9 days and you don't do any other business and all focus is put into the spiritual experience that goes on and on.
My, that sounds simply wonderful. You've done this then. Mm-hmm. You've experienced it. How wonderful. I'm going to interrupt one moment and say that this is KZYX and Z. You're listening to Women's Voices. I'm Janie Reisner. I'm here with my guest, Dr. Mara Lynn Keller from the California Institute of Integral Studies, the director of the Women's Spirituality Programs. So, and we're hearing about this nine-day ritual.
Mm-hmm. Mm. The fourth day was for healing dreams. It was dedicated to the god and goddess of healing, Asclepius and Hygieia. And you ask, well, I love this part in the ancient culture. If you were sick, it was thought that you were out of tune with your destiny, that somehow you weren't on the right path, and that was making you ill. And so you would go and you'd pray to the deities for a visitation in your dreams, so they could tell you what you were really meant to be doing with your life. So that was day four, where it's called incubation, but you go in and ask for a divine vision of what you're meant to do with your life. And then somebody comes and writes it down for you in the morning if you do have that vision. Day five is the procession to Eleusis. Day six for the dedication. Oh, there's a night of revelry once they get to Eleusis. And then the last two nights of the mystery were especially secret. We only have a few clues of what happened, but we think there was a pageant or passion play that gave the sacred drama of Demeter and Persephone. Your listeners probably know about Persephone being abducted into the underworld by Hades, and Demeter's searching for her and her loss, and the grief that both of them suffer by being separated. And Demeter withdraws her fertility from the earth, and all the people are threatened with famine and have no more gifts to give to Zeus. And so he's lost half his powers. The father god, who had arranged for Persephone to be abducted in the first place, so he relents and says the daughter can be returned to the mother, and sends to have her be returned. They race to embrace one another and then spend the day full of joy and happy again to be together. It's really one of the most beautiful celebrations of the love of mother and daughter for each other in all of world literature, in the Homeric hymn to Demeter from the Archaic Age of Greece, but it's rarely read or celebrated in our culture. But this is one of the great myths of the world. And then Persephone is able to return to the underworld, become queen of the underworld, and have her presence in all three realms of the underworld, the middle world, and the heavens, bringing all the realms of the cosmos back together. And she has new powers now and comes into her own fullness as a woman. And I think the psychological story there that the Jungians point to is that until we can go into the underworld of our own psyches, our shadows, the whatever has been lost to us or abandoned, the lost child, the wounded child, the one who has been violated, and bring her back again to the embrace of the mother goddess, the return to the mother, she will be lost in the underworld in Hades, but she can return to wholeness, and then the whole world, the whole cosmos opens to her again.
Mm. Beautiful. That's just beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing it. I had no idea.
Well, it is so moving. I'm always moved by this story.
Yes.
And I identify with it, as a young woman in the maternal years, now in my elder years. It just honors women at all stages of our lives and tells our stories. All of us go through that, and not only women but also men experience that abduction into the underworld and suffering and separation. And
you bet.
The need to get out of hell again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the faith there, I mean, why it drew me in as a faith is that you believe that you will get out of hell again and that there is a way back to the loving source.
Yes. The underneath it all, the benevolent universe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yes.
So that was their faith and their belief, and they celebrated that every year, all together as a community.
Think what our lives would be like if we did such a thing.
Very different, I think.
Yes, I believe they would. Mm-hmm. Yes. We could talk about CIIS, too. We do want to talk about it. The program that you're directing has been in existence how long?
14 years now. And an established MA and PhD program, higher education. You know, we know that the women's spirituality movement is worldwide, and it's been growing from the grassroots and actually in the subcultures of the United States and Europe and elsewhere. But the need for and longing for women to reclaim the freedom of our own spirits and worship freely as we please and feel free to worship the goddess if we please, or goddess and God, that this is something that women are reclaiming all around the world, and we feel it's so important for redressing the imbalances that have given way too much power in culture to what I call the patriarchal warrior clans.
That's a good patriarchal warrior clans, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Mm. We have them in this country, and they have them in the Middle East. They have them in different parts of the world, but they wreak havoc on people's lives.
Well, of course. We're seeing it as we're at the edge of oblivion here,
mm-hmm.
in every area you want to look.
Mm-hmm. So that's why we feel women's spirituality is so important, and we're very happy and feel very grateful we have this opportunity at CIIS to take seriously the study of women's spiritual gifts and experiences across history and around the world. So we have many classes that do that, that make up our MA degree and our PhD degree. I thought I'd mention a few of the classes coming up this spring, for example. Arisa Karazak and I will be teaching a course on women's visionary film. Lucia Birnbaum will be teaching on A World Without War. Carol Christ will be teaching theology and theology for us online from Greece, from her home in Greece. And a woman in Spain will be teaching sapphic genealogies, also online. Then we have women's embodiment, sexuality, and healing. And I'll be team teaching with Joan Marler, the goddesses of prehistory. So that gives you an idea of some of the courses that we offer, which take seriously women's spiritual gifts and contributions to culture.
Can anyone just take a class?
People can come. They can come as auditors. They can come as special students. And so, yes, they can.
Good. And some of them are online, too.
Some of them are online. We've developed what's called the flexible format plan so that we have not only weekday classes for people who are local, but night classes, weekend classes, online classes, and summer intensives, so that people who can't come, who don't live in the Bay Area or can't afford to move here for whatever reasons and responsibilities, can still access our courses.
Yes.
Oh, and Charlene Spretnik teaches with us Poetics of the Female Voice.
Hmm, lovely.
And we had Paula Gunn Allen teaching with us this fall on Native American spiritualities.
Yes. And Eleanor Gaydon was one of the original.
She was the founder of the program.
Founder of the program.
Mm-hmm. Wrote the Once and Future Goddess.
Well, you know, the CIIS is really seems to be a gathering place for many of the women that we know, you know, at least on this coast, and I would think all over the country, Rhianne Eisler and Alice Walker, and mm-hmm. I mean, it's quite a long list.
Jennifer Barrison teaches every spring with us. She has a wonderful course called the Healing Ecstasy of Sound.
Well, you know, speaking of her, we do have some music of hers. I wonder if this would be a good time to just play it.
Sure.
I want to say our station identification. This is KCYX and Z in Philo. And this is a work, Praises for the World, that has lots of people participating in it. And this was initially performed, wasn't it, in Berkeley at the...
Well, it was in Oakland, actually, performance, our Women's Spirituality, and then CIS co-produced the event. It was at the Oakland Masonic.
Oh, I didn't realize.
It was so beautiful, and then they got to take it on the road to Atlanta, Georgia, and it was produced there.
Oh, how exciting.
Yes.
All right. Well, in this cut, we are going to hear, Alice Walker speaking. Let's see if I can do this.
We have a beautiful mother. Her hills of buffaloes, her buffaloes' hills. We have a beautiful mother. Her oceans are wombs. Her wombs, oceans. Have a beautiful mother. Her teeth, the white stones at the edge of the water, the summer grasses, her plentiful hair. We have a beautiful mother. Her green lap, immense. Her brown embrace, eternal. Her blue body, everything we know.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Isn't it, though?
Yes, it brought tears to my eyes today when I was listening to it.
It just opens the heart. It's so beautiful. Jennifer is such a beautiful musician, composer, songwriter, and she creates these ritual concerts that are just so deep.
I have her other, one of her CDs, Returning,
mm-hmm.
which was recorded in the Hypogeum in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and yes, it's Returning to the Mother of Us All.
Oh, yes. And then Olympia Dukakis speaks and this wonderful prayer. Mm-hmm. It's all just lovely. It's so wonderful to be bathed in that, you know?
Well, I agree so much. And this is why when we do women's spirituality, it's scholarships plus sacred arts. sacred arts of ritual and also of song, music and dance, of healing. It's just all those many things that we used to do as women, much more, you know, usually in culture, but so much all of our lives as men and women have gotten caught up into this way too rapid pace of, I don't know what to call it. It's just rushing towards, I'm not sure what.
Extinction.
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 The
yes.
Lemming, the lemming lurch here.
Yes, indeed. I guess that's what you could call it. And so it's so, such balm, you know, to hear the words that you've been speaking and to hear this music. It really is balm to our soul, I think.
It pulls us back into our hearts and our bodies and our souls. I feel that. It always feels so nourishing to me and healing and helpful and enjoyable.
Speaking of body, you are a Rosen method body worker, practitioner, and movement teacher. So you studied with
Marion Rosen.
Marion Rosen.
She's 93, bless her heart, and she's still flying off to Sweden and Canada and elsewhere to do her workshops. She's actually, I really do want your listeners to know about this too. She's going to be teaching at CIS a weekend workshop. I think it's the last weekend in April, and that's open. And she'll anyway, we had 50 people taking the workshop with her last spring.
Oh, my goodness.
But that's such, you know, I really recommend people get a chance to be in
her presence. You know, I've seen her once working. I watched a demonstration. It was quite wonderful. Actually, I was speaking with someone not too long ago who was also is a practitioner, and it seems to me that Marion was in the Arizona or someplace.
I think it's New Mexico. There's a center there. There's a center in Berkeley. Let's see. I know she went up to Ukiah to do some workshop up there not too long ago. And Spirit Rock, she goes to every year. But it's amazing work that brings us back into deep connection with ourselves, beneath the barriers that have been built in by the whatever experiences were too difficult to handle the moment.
It's a very much a hands-on.
Very much hands. It's hands-on.
Yes.
Yes.
Do you work as a practitioner too at this point in time?
I've been teaching the Rosen class to others at CIIS now.
Oh, really?
Last summer we had a one-unit weekend. This fall we did another one-unit weekend. And it's, we always say when we give a session, we receive a session. But, you start with relaxation, going deeper into yourself, and that invites people to go into that theta wave or place of reverie right next to sleep that's a self-healing place. And then whatever, we work with the unconscious in Rosen works, connecting to the unconscious through the body. We kind of bypass the talking mind.
Yes. Well, I did a lot of work with Reikian therapy.
Uh-huh.
And so that's kind of the same idea. There isn't as much talk. There isn't talk.
It's the energy. It's the release of the armoring.
Exactly.
Very, very similar principles.
We usually open up the lines at this time. I'd like to kind of get this cover this subject, and then we will open them up. You speak of some remnants of the Matrix culture still alive and functioning in remote parts of the Earth, and so I'm wondering about that.
It is. There's a growing field called Contemporary Matriarchal Studies, which Peggy Reeve-Sande, who teaches, full professor at University of Pennsylvania, Heidi Gottner-Abendroth in Germany, they put together a congress in Geneva, and then a second World Congress on Matriarchal Studies in Austin, Texas, a couple of years ago. So there's a growing interest in the study of contemporary matriarchal societies. There's a professor at UC Berkeley, Sunshin Du, who wrote, I think it was called Chopsticks Only Work in Pairs. And these are egalitarian cultures with matrilineal, sometimes they say in their own words, matriarchal customs, and they exist today you know, we became fascinated some years ago to think that there were matristic cultures in old Europe and elsewhere, Egypt and Africa, that we could learn about existing. And the work of Maria Gimbutas is so important in that respect, to show that there were matristic cultures in old Europe. Ancient Crete was clearly a matrilineal, matrifocal, goddess-centered culture, which we could probably call a matriarchal culture, but where men are fully respected and enjoyed as partners in all things. So this is ancient, but you know, what's even more exciting is to see all the work on contemporary cultures. As in Chiapas, the film Blossoms of Fire was an exciting film about a matriarchal culture in southern Mexico.
Blossoms of Fire?
Blossoms of Fire.
Is that available?
I think so. It is.
Oh, good.
Yeah, Joan and I plan to show it in our class this spring. And then Hopi Song of the Fourth World, about the Hopi or matrilineal culture. People don't use the word matriarchal because they think, oh, it's women dominating men. And so because people have that kind of simplistic notion of it, we prefer the word matristic. But it's where women are at the center and the cultures are in balance and men and women share the life in a more egalitarian way. So Peggy Reeves-Sande does a very interesting book. It's called Women at the Center, Life in a Modern Matriarchy, is the book that she's written. And it really is fascinating to learn all these details about what's been going on in different parts. And patriarchy has had such a hold on our consciousness here in the West that people are simply ridiculed if they imagine these things exist, but there's more and more evidence coming out all the time. I wanted to mention, too, because you mentioned Rhianne Eisler, and of course she works very hard looking into the matristic past but of prehistory, but also bringing that forward for what she calls a dynamic partnership future. She's actually teaching a course for us at CIIS this spring. So
this is an MA in the MA program, right?
In the Learning and Change MA, an online program, yes.
Let's open up the phone lines now. What about Genevieve Vaughn's gift-giving economy? I haven't had her on as a guest, and I haven't really explored that subject very much, but it seems to me if we are to live in a different way, then we need to distribute our goods and know how to deal with each other than through money.
Well, I think there'd be many wonderful benefits to that. That's part of the matriarchal studies and conferences. I know,
oh,
Lucia.
Can I interrupt you for a moment?
Sure.
We have a phone call. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay.
Good evening. You're on Women's Voices.
Yes, this is Mary D. Bowers, and I wanted to say hello to Mara.
Oh, Mary D., hi.
I'm still running a nonprofit tax-exempt organization called Matrix of Change.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'm so happy to hear from you again. Mary D. and I were friends back in Berkeley when I first came to Berkeley and shared this same interest.
Yeah, I won't take up much time because there are probably other you want to cover more, but I... What we're doing is we're following along in Alice Waters' direction and doing gardening with schools. And
Well, that was part of what we wanted to talk about tonight, was how actually there in Willits and Sebastopol, and now we're hearing from you up there, that just the way to bring the values, the matristic values, to change the life in this direction, and that means how we grow our food and the kind of food we eat and how we bring children into a new set of values. So maybe you can tell us something of more of what you're doing.
Well, we're working with Horicon School, which is in Annapolis, and they have a little garden. They have a fairly new school. I mean, the school's been there for years, but it's a new building. And the way it got designed is they have a little garden area connected to each classroom. And we're just getting this underway, and what I've been building a model based on putting together work from Ellen Langer, who's on mindful awareness or mindful learning, mm-hmm. together with a program called Inner Kids that Susan Kaiser Greenland has been developing down in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little too complicated to go into right now, but you could read parts of that in Daniel Siegel's book on the Mindful Brain. He covers both of those.
Uh-huh. Oh, well, thank you.
And it's
you.
An approach to gardening. I mean, we're just getting it underway, so.
Oh, Mary Dee, well, I'm so glad to hear from you again. I will give you a call, and thank you for the work you're doing there. Just to think of every class having its own garden and kids being able to go out and grow things season by season.
Thank you so much for calling in. It's
sure.
good to hear from you. There is so much archaeological and DNA and genetic research that clearly shows that we're all descended from one black mother out of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucia Birnbaum's work, I've interviewed her and talked about her Dark Mother book. Again, and you, of course, she's on your faculty.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And this is another thing that seems to be very hard to get out into the world.
Well, you know, it's getting out more and more because more and more scientific evidence keeps coming in that we all came out of Africa. There have been two waves out of Africa, but the our Homo sapiens species came out of Africa and spread across all the continents of the globe and over to China and back again into Europe and over, you know, into Australia and across the Bering Straits and all, that we all really, you know, changed from geographic place and climate, you know, and our skin types change and a few other things change as we move around the globe, but we're all human and we all come from the same lineage and we can all trace our genetic roots back to our mothers and fathers there in Africa.
And the other piece of that, of course, is that they were peaceful.
Well, what is important to me in that work is that we all, because Lucia talks about carrying the religion of the Great Mother with them as they came out of Africa, there's this notion we all share a common spiritual heritage. And for us to just imagine we have common ancestors. Ancestor worship is a long, long, honorable tradition, and we should honor the people that we come from as far back as we can go, and that means going all the way back to Africa.
Yes. And another thing that's so interesting to me is the rock art.
Mm.
And I've been looking at it on the web, and it's simply stunning.
Mm-hmm. I happened to see some of the Paleolithic rock art this summer when I was in Spain. It was such a thrill to see the animals, to see the human hands. It was just amazing that because it's beautiful artwork. I mean,
it is. To be beautiful under any circumstances, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And so we have these artistic geniuses as forebears. Comes on through. It's carried forward in our DNA, and we can tap into that.
Would you like to give the website of CIIS, and maybe you have a website that you'd like to?
Sure. People can go. It's very simple. www.ciis.edu, edu for education, but edu. And then you click on academic programs and go to women's spirituality, and then you can. There's our homepage with information on our faculty and our students and graduates. And I do want to mention also on our website, we're very excited. We've just begun this fall. We launched a new electronic online academic journal in women's spirituality called Ochre. So there's our Ochre Journal. It's our first issue of the Ochre Journal of Women's Spirituality. And we're going to be putting that out once a year, academic peer-reviewed journal, but with poetry and wonderful artwork, a photo essay, and three excellent articles that I think your readers might enjoy. This is what I'm so grateful that you're doing with your Women's Voices show, or Mary Dee Bowers is doing with Matrix for Change, and Jennifer Barrison and her ritual concerts, and the books and conferences we've mentioned, that people keep doing these things to bring the message of women's spirituality out to the larger world. There is resistance, there is negativity, we know that, but that's nothing new. That's been going on for centuries. And it's so important, the values that we bring forward. So I just am so grateful to everyone who's doing this.
Yes. You know, the push from the religious right to quiet any evidence in this direction is understood because it threatens their whole paradigm. Since repression begins with repression of women, it wouldn't do to let their tale be told.
They would lose their main power. They would lose the main support for their whole system.
Yes, and the Father God who approves of war would clearly only exist as a projection of their own warlike minds.
Mm-hmm.
So we understand where that push comes to squelch any history and how well they've done it when you consider that we've lived all these years and are just awakening.
Well, you know, I'm sometimes puzzled and perplexed about the hostility that comes towards people who mention the word goddess or women's spirituality. You think, well, it's one choice among many. This is something that I want. I'm not insisting that you believe the same way I do, but, you know, how come you're hostile that I want to do this? What is that? Where is that coming from? And is that fear of the mother, or is it or just holding on to their own power and with a sense of insecurity? Great. And so I don't know where the fear comes from, but it's connected to hostility, and it's just unfortunate.
Yes.
They try to erase this whole story that we have.
That's right. By the way, you mentioned a church, the Church of Her.
Oh, Her Church.
Her Church in San Francisco.
There was a wonderful conference this just a couple weekends ago at Her Church, Ebenezer Lutheran Church in San Francisco. It was called Wisdom's Urgent Cry. It was a feminist, Mujerista, womanist conference looking for wisdom for the needs, the urgent, desperate needs we have for today, for survival. And where is the wisdom in what we're doing? So I feel that's a very important piece of what we bring forward. There are traditions of women's wisdom that come out of the ancient world in all the cultures, whether it's from Egypt or Israel or the early Christian church, the Greek culture. They were Isis and Athena and Demeter and Sophia Cabelli. These were goddesses of great wisdom who raised up the communities and protected them and taught them all the skills they needed to know, and like the arts of weaving or metallurgy or numbers. And they just, you know, all the arts and crafts and wisdom that it needed to live a good life. And they were often the gifts of the great goddess that the people worshipped in the old world. That's carried forward in Sophia and Shekinah in some of the traditions, but mostly our religious systems have been missing who I call Holy Lady Wisdom.
That's
I
wonderful.
I could call her back in.
Holy Lady Wisdom, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Our time is running out. Mm-hmm. I'm so appreciative of your being on the air and hearing what you have to say, and it was lovely for your friend to call and connect and hear what she's doing as well.
Yes. So thank you for bringing women's voices out to the larger world, and your music, too, which is so beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jane.
Yes.
Okay.
Good night.
Good being with you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You, and you. Good night.
A song of reason.